On July 17th, 2020, a changed America changed yet more. As the nation suffers through excruciating spasms of racial tension, through starkly different interpretations of moral justice, through a fatal absence of effective leadership in the face of an unprecedented and deadly health crisis, it now also must grapple with the loss of Congressman John Robert Lewis. Nancy Pelosi eulogized John Lewis as the conscience of the Congress. Those of us who were fortunate enough to know him would never disagree. John Lewis was a son of sharecroppers who felt the physical lash of racism on his body in Selma, Alabama, in 1965. John Lewis was among those whose actual blood led to that historic day in civil rights history coming to be known as Bloody Sunday. John was a preacher way before he was a politician. And for all of his 80 years, he modeled the nonviolent but uncompromising call for justice that so many of us found so inspiring. John Lewis was devoted to the very fundamental American values, freedom, opportunity, the dignity of each individual, that are now being used against Americans. 6 months into his battle with cancer, just 6 days before he finally lost that battle, on July 11th, John Lewis sent out his final tweet. It condemned the administration's attack on foreign students grappling with staying healthy in the face of that same administration's failure in combating COVID-19. Even as the nation grapples with excruciating spasms of racial tension, July 17th was also the day we lost civil rights hero the Reverend Cordy Tyndall C.T. Vivian, who marched and prayed with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and whom King described as the greatest preacher to ever live. Reverend Vivian was 95. I cannot imagine what it must have been like for him to live so long in an America in which his critical work of racial justice is still so far from done. On this week's show, I'll speak with Keith Jennings, president and CEO of the African American Center on Global Politics and Human Rights. Dr. Jennings worked closely with both Reverend Vivian and Congressman Lewis. We'll also hear from Joan Mooney, president and CEO of the Faith and Politics Institute, where John Lewis served as board co-chair beginning in 1998. In reporting on the death of Congressman Lewis, my friend Rachel Maddow said it will be a long time, if ever, before she can find the right words to pay proper tribute to this great man and his lifetime of public service and personal sacrifice. I feel the same way. And that's why I'd like to turn to a 2013 interview with John Lewis that aired on State of Belief, a conversation that remains unforgettable for me, and one that reminds us of who the congressman was and why he is so loved by so many. This is such a unique moment. Martin Luther King's birthday celebration, the inauguration of the first black president to his second term in office. And honestly, I just really wanted to talk with you. You are the person I associate with this kind of moment, and I longed to know what you would be saying about it. when you hear me talk like that about what's happening and about your role in all of this, what are your thoughts about Monday?
It is very moving that as we celebrate the official holiday for Dr. King, we will be inaugurating the first African-American president for his second term. It's like fate and history coming together. At the same time, this year, during this year, we will be celebrating or commemorating the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation and the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. I've said on many occasions that Abraham Lincoln freed the slave, but Martin Luther King Jr. liberated a nation. And for President Barack Obama to be using the Bible of Abraham Lincoln and the Bible of Martin Luther King Jr. to take the oath of office, it says something about almost divine intervention. Yes. It says something about the spirit of history. Only God Almighty can make this happen. That the sons and daughters of slaves, the sons and daughters of slaveholders can come together and embrace the greatness of this moment, of these moments, this period, this time. And we all should embrace it.
John, when you were sitting by that bridge down in Selma, Alabama, wiping blood from your head because of the strikes against your face of those who were against you and civil rights, did you ever think this day would come?
48 years ago, during the attempted march from Selma to Montgomery, I never, ever thought that I would live to see a day like we are witnessing now. I couldn't believe in the possibility, but it's here, and we're seeing it. So that's why, from time to time, I share tears of joy and happiness for the distance we've come, for the progress we've made, and for those that didn't live to see this day, they didn't live to see this moment.
John, you know, you knew Martin Luther King Jr. very well. A lot of us knew him, but at a distance. You knew him up close. Sometimes now, as I think about those days, I worry that there are going to be a lot of people who only read this in a history book or see it on a video, and they're not going perhaps to remember the great gift that this man brought to this nation with nonviolence. I wonder if there is a story about your time with Martin Luther King Jr., a personal story that none of us would ever know, but that you could share with us today, that all of us might know him more personally, might know him more intimately.
The only story that I could tell that means so much to me personally, back in 1957, when I finished high school, at the age of 17, I wanted to attend a little college about 10 miles from my home called Troy State College. It didn't admit black students. I grew up very poor, and I didn't have the resources to go away to school. And I thought it would be cheaper and wouldn't be a burden on my parents if I just had an opportunity to go to this little school. So I wrote a letter to Dr. King and told him I needed his help to go to Troy State College. He wrote me back and sent me a round-trip Greyhound bus ticket and invited me to come to Montgomery to meet with him. I didn't tell my mother, my father, any of my sisters or brothers, any of my teachers that I sent this letter to Dr. King. But Dr. King responded and invited me to come to Montgomery. In the meantime, I went away to Nashville to a little school called American Baptist College. And I told one of my teachers that I'd been in contact with Dr. King, and this teacher was a friend of Dr. King. They both had graduated from Morehouse College together in Atlanta. And Martin Luther King Jr. got back in touch with me and suggested when I was home for spring break to come and see him. On a Saturday morning in March 1958, my father drove me to the Greyhound bus station. I boarded a bus and traveled to Montgomery. And a young lawyer by the name of Fred Gray, who now lives in Tuskegee, met me at the Greyhound bus station and drove me to the First Baptist Church in downtown Montgomery, pastored by the Reverend Ralph Abernathy, and ushered me into the pastor's study, the office of the church. I saw Dr. King and Reverend Ralph Abernathy standing behind a desk. I was so scared. I didn't know what to say or what to do. And Dr. King spoke up and said, "Are you the boy from Troy? Are you John Lewis?" And I said to Dr. King, "I am John Robert Lewis." I gave him my whole name. And that was the beginning of my relationship. Now, he didn't know me. He didn't know me from anyone, from Adam's house cat. But he took the time to invite me to come up and talk with him about my interest in going to Troy State. But from that moment, we became friends. And I was inspired to become part of the movement to work with him. And if it hadn't been for Dr. King, I don't know what would have happened to me. I don't know what would have happened to so many people. I don't know what would have happened to our nation. He really freed and liberated all of us, black and white.
John, one more question. You and I have talked about this at other times. We've made a lot of progress, but we're not there yet. On Monday, as the people of this nation watch the inauguration and celebrate the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr., what is your word for us as we watch and celebrate?
My simple message would be one of not getting trapped in the sermon, but think about what this means to America, what this means to the whole world. Think about the message of Dr. King, the message of love, the message of faith, the message of hope, the message of peace, the way of nonviolence, that we must be our brothers and our sisters' keepers, that we must look out for those that have been left out and left behind, and that maybe, just maybe, if we do what we must do and do it right and do it in love and looking out for all humankind, then just maybe, America could emerge as a model for the rest of the world. Dr. King was there in the final analysis, we're one people, we're one family, we're one house, we're the American house. But we're also the world house. We all live in the same house.
John, I've told you before, you are a hero of singular importance to me. And honestly, there is nobody but you that I would rather talk with about what's going on in our nation this coming Monday. I am so very grateful to you for taking time to do this interview and to let the people who listen to State of Belief hear the depths of your wisdom. Thank you.
Happy to do it. Thank you so much.
That's Representative John Lewis from 2013. The tireless civil rights activist left us on July 17th, 2020. He was 80.